open the work session, and item four has already been attended to. That is award to a former counselor. Labor attorney selection process. Discussion how to proceed with acquiring an attorney firm. Provide contract labor attorney services, noting the city has received bids from three qualified attorney firms.
Mr. Mayor, before we jump into that, I've been advised by Lori that she has to leave here pretty soon. She's got a thing that she needs to attend to. And so could we take item eight, which is further discussion of employee benefits, out of rank and move it up here and discuss it. I know that Lori has provided some information and Don wants to speak to this issue.
Okay. What I'll say is we'll move that at this time. However, I will point out that a unanimous council, we tabled this at the last council meeting until we have a labor attorney. And therefore, I'd like to end the discussion there.
Is that in the minutes? That we tabled it until we had got a minute, yes. An attorney?
Yes.
Well,
I think it's a mistake.
All right, well, if that is the, if that's what the minutes say, then I think we have to respect the minutes.
Then let's go back to item number five.
Okay.
Labor attorney selection process. Steve?
Well, Mr. Mayor, we've discussed the need for a labor attorney for some time now, and that's just more than anything, it's just part of the evolution of our city and its needs. Jeremy and Melissa's firm, they provide for any number of attorney features, but they do not provide for labor attorney processes. So then if we're going to have a labor attorney on board then we need to go through some process to acquire that person. So the staff went and worked with the attorney to construct a request for proposal. We submitted that proposal to five attorney firms and asked them if they were interested, provided the criteria that they needed to give us as part of the solicitation process. In that pursuit, we received timely three bids from three qualified attorney firms. And so you have before you a couple different things. If we proceed forth with a selection process, we have some criteria that Jeremy or Melissa has constructed. And you also have the information from each of the attorney firms as to who their members are and their competencies and their backgrounds in providing this kind of service, and also what they would charge in the way of a fee for services rendered. And with that, then I just turn it over to you folks for discussion purposes, or maybe Jeremy wants to add something to this.
Not much to add other than the memorandum and the attached, scoring sheet evaluation is meant just to simply facilitate your review and evaluation of the proposals that were received. The various items that have been identified as criteria, if you will, mirrors the criteria that was identified in the proposals. You don't have to use the scoring sheet in any shape or form, but again, we thought that it might help facilitate your evaluation.
Are we talking about at this point in time of doing this?
Steve just left it. He did. I believe Steve was going to have you all take that home with you, do your own scoring at your leisure, and I believe next month is when he anticipated making a selection. Or I'm sorry, that he would like you all to make your selection.
Okay. Let's take a moment, because I'd like to, you know, hear that.
I understand.
Hear that. Steve, would you, Jeremy has outlined the fact that the idea is to take this, take these proposals home along with this evaluation form, do some evaluating, and come back to our next...
On the 10th.
On the 10th.
Right.
With some feeling about how we wanted to proceed.
Okay. That certainly works. You know, again, this is a work session. You can't take an action anyway.
Right.
But it's an important thing, and this is a good time to have any conversation that would vet any issues or concerns about the labor attorney selection process. So, you know, feel free, while the getting's good, say whatever needs to be said if something needs to be said now.
I would like to start that off by saying that we are aware of the process as it has been put forth. We know that we actually sent out the we put together an RFP that was sent out to five firms, and we had three respond. We also know, or should know, or can discuss the idea now that one of those individuals, Bruce Bischoff, which was sent a copy of the proposal, or request for proposal, had made an offer to the city to represent the city as a labor attorney for no cost. And he did not respond to the request for proposal. And having met him function at the county, I asked him specifically why, was he still interested in doing the pro bono as a labor attorney for the city. He said yes, and I asked him why he didn't submit a proposal, and he said, well, he had made an offer to do it for free and didn't really think that he needed to submit one. I have since had some thoughts about this, specifically around money. I would like to point out the difference between pro bono or free and the fact that one of the attorneys has offered a contract up, I think it's for $350, one for $295, and one for $275. I don't think that we have as a good grasp as a council the aspects of saying that we know enough about labor attorney aspects to say that it might not cost us a lot of money because of our situation. And I say this with a little part of tongue-in-cheek, the fact that we know how many attorney jokes are out there.
Yeah. How many are out there?
Their number is at infinity. However, the idea that, you know, you can never tell what the expense is going to be. I mean, it can go off into exorbitant amounts of money. And we don't have a bottomless general fund or a paycheck, a checkbook. I think it's very prudent of us at some point in time to look into some of the questions with this attorney who has offered to do it for free. Now, having said that, I totally agree that we are in a process. We have let out a request for proposal. We have received that, and we have an obligation in ethics, if nothing else, to proceed in that form. However, I think it would be prudent for the council to consider, and we're in a work session, so I think consensus of the council would allow us to do this, to take a couple of the council members and the city manager and sit down with Mr. Bischoff. And I might point out that he actually owns property and here in the community, but sit down with this attorney and ask him questions around what he means by do it for free, and and why he didn't send the proposal back. So that's my input.
Mr. Mayor, is this gentleman retired?
No, he's not. He's actually he is the he has a considerable client list, as I understand. He's the labor attorney for Deschutes County. He's the labor attorney for Hood County, and there's another others that I don't recall, but I did hear that he was the labor attorney for Lake County.
So he is a practicing attorney.
He's a practicing attorney, and as a matter of fact, he was for a short time before he quit the labor attorney for the sewer and water district. But without any intent or idea that we would move away from the process that we have established, there's no idea for that. I'm just adding these comments that to get the council's thoughts and quite frankly consensus to have a sit down session between the city manager and. I'd like to be there, and I know that Stu has worked with this labor attorney at the fire department. Isn't that right, Stu? Mm-hmm. I think it's
if I understand right, in order to consider this gentleman, what we would have to do is to reject all of these who have applied and met the time qualifications and everything, and then reopen it, pardon me, and re-advertise. Is that correct?
That would be our recommendation if you were going to entertain a proposal from Mr. Bischoff. Right now, however, I think Ken is just simply wanting to communicate with him, talk to them, right?
Right. And I'm just suggesting to the council that we make the decision to allow that to happen.
And I'd like to, I was in on this conversation with our attorney, our city manager, and the mayor, and what brought it about was a phone call from the mayor asking my thoughts on, you know, if it was appropriate to do this. And at the time, I wasn't at our last meeting, so I didn't know that the process had started. And that was my concern, that if the process had started and he failed to meet the qualifications, then we shouldn't even be discussing this matter with him. And I'm still of that opinion. And that's why I asked this to be brought up tonight, because I didn't think it appropriate for three people sitting in the office to make that decision. I thought it best to come to the full council to get your thoughts, because yes, I have worked with Mr. Bischoff in the past. He is a practicing attorney. He knows that, and he's aware that the RFP went out, and he knows that he knew there was a deadline. And so I just don't like the idea of making an exception because he says he didn't think he had to follow the rules because he was going to do it for free. So if someone wants to go and talk to him, that's that person's prerogative. But I don't think that person needs to go representing the city, because as our attorney pointed out, you know, and my concern is if we make this exception once, what's to stop the next person from saying, well, they made an exception one time, why should I follow the rules? So that's where I'm at on this.
Dan?
it's kind of a tough one, because we consistently all the time we're saying we want to watch out for our taxpayers' money and be good stewards. And yet we have processes in place. And so it is tough. As much as anything else, I'd like to get the most bang for my buck as a taxpayer in this community. Is there a process to deal with this? I think maybe you already said there was.
Yeah.
We should be good stewards. You know, I kind of feel bad if I'm one of these guys and I complied and didn't. If I wasn't successful, that doesn't feel right either. But we can't really put him on the grid. We can't put him in here because we don't have the information. So, I mean, it works against us. I mean, he's offering to help us, but since he didn't supply any information, it sort of works against us. I'm not experienced enough to know how tightly we have to follow a process that we set up like this. I mean, I think we have to do the right thing.
I think we're to do the right thing. Don?
I agree with Stu.
Having everybody said their piece, I'll make another comment. Stu used the term make an exception. We're not making any exceptions. We would not be making any exceptions. The only kind of exception that we discussed, and this is really for clarification, that we discussed in our conversations earlier today, was the fact of whether we could make an exception to the process that we are currently in. And we all came to the agreement that we shouldn't do that in any way, shape, or form. What the subject really is at this point in time, taking into consideration that one, he made an offer, that was known about, that he offered to do it for free, and stated that he didn't feel he needed to because he was going to do it for free. All we're talking about here is to sit down with him. I think it would be prudent for taking the opportunity to sit down with him and get in. We're just gathering information that the council could look at any other time that may be beneficial to us, especially as it relates to expending what could be enormous amount of public funds and not doing our due diligence to find this information out, whether it's even relevant at this point in time or not. And all I see us looking for consent here is that for the city to sit down with him and ask him some basic questions.
Well, and we could have done that had he followed the rules. But we would have had that. And why bring up the fact that he owns property in the community?
Well, we've always talked about when we do contracts, we would endeavor to make sure we spend our money in the local community.
So we disregard the folks that don't own property, but yet followed the rules.
No. It has nothing to do that, other than when we, you know, and I would, I'm sure the city manager would back this up, that we will always endeavor to support our citizens who are business people, who have connections to our community, who will in some one way or another expend some of the city monies in this town. And it's not any other reason than to say, you know, we go out here and hire a general contractor that who lives in the community to do some general work for us, that money turns around in this community. It becomes, I'm sure the chamber would agree that it becomes an issue that we're supporting those entities within the city to the best of our ability. So that's all that meant.
Okay.
So really, we're back down to just this idea of granted, he did not come forward. And that's all part of the case that we are going to move through this process. But I think it would be prudent that we sit down with him and ask him, well, tell us why. And of what value is this? And you didn't respond, and just fill us in on this. It can do no harm. I mean, we're not going to interrupt our process in any way, shape, or form. It can do us no harm to get a good explanation that all of the council members can understand, and then either do something with it or just lay it aside and move on. I think it's fair and prudent as we deliberate and make these decisions.
Mr. Mayor, as it appears to me, at our next meeting, we should either accept one of these proposals or throw them all out and start over again. And I think that that's a decision that's not up to me, but it's up to the entire council to make. And if this gentleman is so willing to work for free, then we're not spending money here in the community because he's not getting any money, so we're not spending it here because we're not paying it, okay? But I think it's up to the council to make up their mind. Either they go with one of these or they throw out all of them and start over again and go through the whole process.
I don't think there's any I don't think there's any idea that that's not the process. I agree with that totally. But I'm just saying that I think we'd be prudent in looking into why he didn't and the misunderstanding that could be laying out there why why he didn't follow through on making these. I can't see any harm in it. I think it brings information to the council. I think it's prudent to do, and I will leave it there with asking the council to consent to a couple of us, along with the city manager, sitting down with him and asking him some questions.
I've got a couple comments. You know, the whole idea of hiring anybody, whoever you hire, even if you hire them for nothing, is just a trust issue, you know. and I see everybody struggling here because he's put us in an awkward position because he couldn't follow the rules, right? And that's bothersome to me at the get-go, because we're hanging our hat on him later, that he'll be there for us and he'll defend us and he'll represent our best interest, and yet he just right out of the get-go, he's short-tripped us. And the other thing is, we're having to go to him instead of him come to us. And I just feel awkward about that, you know? I mean, if you really want to do our business, even for free, you ought to come knock on our door. We shouldn't have to go hand in hand and ask you how you feel about maybe doing some work for us. And I guess just being in this business a lot of years, when someone sets that kind of stage, it says maybe down the road you're going to have problems with this person. You're going to need them for something very specific that comes up in a hurry, and, you know, they're just not there for you. So I throw that out as just a reservation. Looking at this whole thing, it just doesn't feel good.
I don't know, I've sat in, you know, hours with Bruce in a room in negotiations, and I like that, but I'm sorry.
Does anybody have an idea what to expect to pay a labor attorney in a year? Do we have what's in our budget? What do we expect to pay?
I believe that we have in our budget about $75,000 for labor, for attorney services overall, which would be the whole gamut of attorneys that you might hire during the course of the year. So there's money in the bucket for this person in that regard. You know, my hope is that we don't have any labor issues that are going to need this person, that all they do is serve in the capacity of a placeholder that buys us some assurance and some comfort that if we need them, they're a phone call away. But my thought is to love our employees to death where we won't have any labor issues, and to have them love me to death so there's no labor issues this way either. And also to love you guys to death and the public to death.
Anybody else?
And you too, Dan.
Is there any further discussion?
Yeah.
I could probably read this, but how long are we contracting? Are we committed to one of these if we take them on?
Well, what I'm trying to aim for in labor services of any kind, and you're going to see more and more of these, is a three-year contract. If we do them annually, we're just going to wear ourselves out because we've got so many different contracts. My thought is 3 years. You know, they've got the predictability. They get some institutional memory. We'll know how well we work with them. That's what I'm aiming for, is 3 years.
I believe the proposal is set up for 3 years.
3 years, okay. Yeah. Well, one thing that I know about human nature is you tend to be more responsible and work harder when you're getting paid something. You know, if you're getting paid for what you do, you tend to, and I believe that that's the right thing to do, is to pay somebody for the work they do. And I appreciate that he's offering to do it for pro bono. And there's times when that's important. But you're naturally going to prioritize the guy that's paying you a fee versus the guy that isn't, if there's a conflict of demand on time and energy, you know. I would rather hire or utilize the best person we can get for the money, and we don't have the information from him. Like you say, we could get it. We could probably get it. And I'm not opposed to that. But here's how I really feel about it. I'd like to pay him if we bring him on.
What Dan's saying is, if he'd rather go fishing than go to court, he'd go fishing.
Well, I don't know about that, but I mean, if he has a paying job that's, you know, a similar job for Redmond, and then there's us, and you know, how can you not do that? I mean, I don't know.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll move to item six, update on Lapine Cemetery transfer process.
Thank you, Mayor and council members. As you know, the Lapine Community Cemetery has been run by a volunteer organization for a number of years, and they've done a very good job of maintaining the integrity of the cemetery. But they're tired now, and they always had it, the understanding at some point that when the city started to evolve and be able to put its feet under itself, that they would transfer the community cemetery city, and the city would assume that responsibility. So we're now at that point where they've knocked on our door and said, we'd ask you to consider assuming this important responsibility at this time. And so I've worked with Melissa and Jeremy to put together a memorandum for you that kind of says, here's how we go about doing this process, which is going to take some time. And I think the goal would be that by, say, December this year, between the responsibilities of the Community Cemetery Association and ourselves, we'd be in a position to make for that transfer, similarly as it took us some time to make for the sewer and the water transfer. We had to enter into a transfer agreement. I believe we're going to have to do something here similarly. But with that said, I will defer to Jeremy or Melissa for comment.
Thank you, Steve. So basically, cemeteries are licensed by the state board. Licenses are non-transferable, so there is a process that is set out in state statute and regulations. I can give a quick overview of that. It's outlined in the memo in front of you. Basically, there's an application form that would have to be filled out. There's a fee, either $100 or $150, depending on how many interments per year the cemetery performs. There's an application as well for a change of principal. And a principal is a person who is either a manager or someone with decision-making authority over the cemetery. So we would be submitting that. There may or may not be a background information questionnaire that we would have to submit. There would be registration of the cemetery name with the state board. If there's an assumed business name, we would have to register that with the Secretary of State as well. Once all of our applications are submitted, the board will schedule what's basically an inspection for the location and the records of the cemetery. So the records would include a declaration of dedication, a map of the cemetery, a copy of the deed, a copy of the cemetery rules, any pre-need sales contracts, if those exist, price lists, and so on. According to the board, when you schedule an inspection, it can take up to 4 weeks. So as soon as the application forms are prepared, when we get ready to submit those, if possible, we could submit these other documents as well to sort of speed up the process and request an inspection date so that it can get on the books as soon as possible. Otherwise, you know, the longer you wait to do those things, the more it'll push out the schedule. Once the inspection occurs, if there's no other issues, typically a temporary authorization would be issued to the city, and at that time, the city could begin operating it, and then that temporary authorization would be ratified by the state board at its next regularly scheduled bi-monthly meeting. They do have a meeting scheduled in November, so that would be the date that we would shoot for having everything accomplished before that. If it doesn't occur by then, for example, if the inspection doesn't occur before that time, then of course it would be pushed out to January or even March, since they meet every other month. So in addition to all the requirements set out in the state statute, there would be a transfer agreement that Steve mentioned between the current operating entity and the city. It would have to be conditioned on the city obtaining the necessary license, because of course the city couldn't run the cemetery without obtaining the license. So we would structure that to be a function of when the temporary authorization is given as part of the inspection. And then there are a couple of steps the current operating entity would have to take as well. They have to receive approval from the state. It's not clear if there's a form that they would have to fill out, but as part of our understanding of this process, we plan on contacting the state board to make sure that we have all the proper applications and aren't missing any of the steps. And then also the current operating entity, as required by their current rules, would have to authorize the transaction, but that can be built into the transfer agreement. So that's a general overview. Are there any questions or comments? Or Jeremy, you want to add anything?
Towards the end of the memorandum, we included a tentative calendar, or schedule, if you will, of this transfer process. Obviously, it's a moving target. All of those target dates are flexible and dependent upon how quickly the city acts, the cemetery acts, and then ultimately how quickly the board can schedule the inspection. And so that's somewhat of a kind of cross your fingers type schedule. It's an expedited schedule. It may be more likely that we're into January or March before it all wraps up, but hopefully we can accommodate that schedule, and we'll get on it commencing next week, provided it's still the will of the City Council to move forward with it, of course. Any questions? Comments?
When was the? How long do you have to do the process to complete the process with this board, cemetery board?
Well, there's no deadline date. I mean, we can start whenever we want.
And didn't we also already take ownership of it?
We have ownership of the property. We just do not have ownership of the operational assets or the operation itself.
And we just found out we needed to do this?
No, actually, we have no requirement. There's no legal obligation for us to do that. It is something that I believe, and again, Steve, you tell me if I'm wrong, but I believe the cemetery approached Steve requesting that the city assume operational control.
I thought we already did that.
No, we've discussed it, but we haven't got there yet because, again, you certainly, again, protocol, want to follow all the rules that are in place and need to be attended to. You know, and the other thing is, none of us have been in the cemetery business before. It really behooves us to understand all the players and who's responsible for, the remains of all of our community. So something we want to do correctly and not have anybody come back and say, you didn't do it right.
Yeah, my recollection was we set a committee, a committee to take care of that. I'm really surprised that it's coming back up. I thought that was all a done deal. So.
Let me just comment that we did talk about, the idea that they wanted us to take it over. And we have had a couple of meetings with them, gathering information, and that's what's brought the city manager to this point of having gathered information and their desire to turn it over. And I personally think that it's part of the city and the city ought to manage the cemetery. And yeah, they would totally like to get rid of it.
If we accept this and go ahead and go through the process, do we select or hire somebody to oversee the operation over there? For instance, know where the lots are that are available, know how they're to be opened and all of the rest of that stuff? So that would be up to us to hire somebody, or would this be a volunteer situation?
Well, so whatever you decide to do ultimately, once you take it over, you could contract out the operational services aspects, or you could deal with it in-house.
Scott, can you help us out here a little bit?
Yeah, I don't believe the cemetery board actually pays any of the, we'll say, employees that are there. I think the money that they get is part of the service of laying somebody to rest out there. I think the cemetery board has come up with a little bit of money for that building that they have, and occasionally they buy a little gravel, but
they contract out for the for the burial process, right?
For the digging. Mm-hmm. They do pay somebody.
The cemetery board doesn't pay them. That comes from
you're right. That actually comes through the families.
Right, right. Through the mortuary.
But who says that they're the only ones that can do it? I'm not sure. I'm guessing that must be the cemetery board that's set up to where the gentleman that does it is the gentleman that does it.
If I could offer, too, the comments that in here somewhere I saw the comments that we would develop
rules and regulations.
Would develop rules and regulations.
That's correct.
The council would make the decision about, do we want to contract this out? Do we want to have our rules and regulations stipulate that we will contract it out and let it be managed that way? Or do we do this in-house? And I think that's the information that will come to us as we make a decision. Isn't that fair to say it that way?
Yeah.
Due diligence of
and I think it'll be multi-part. I think in-house will have some responsibilities. I think the mortuary will have some responsibilities. And there'll probably be a contractor that does the burials. They'll have some responsibility both to the mortuary and to the city. So, you know, I see it as a bi-party kind of a thing, maybe a three-party arrangement that we will end up with once we know what we're doing.
There is some money in the committee's funds. I think it's over the years they've amassed about $17,000.
That's correct.
They have software on a computer that has all of the burials, who's buried where, and that kind of stuff. It's just some of the information. Okay. Any further? That's an update. So okay. We moved to item 7, which is discussion concerning the Lapine Public Works Committee streetlight placement recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. We have a very outstanding public works committee who has a real interest in this community's welfare and is looking at any number of things. And one of the things they've been looking at is streetlights, because streetlights are important for any number of reasons. They're important, first of all, for safety, and particularly at intersections. They're also helpful to law enforcement, so they can keep an eye on different things. And thirdly, they're very helpful in terms of connection. Let's say that you lived in Crescent Creek, for instance, and you had a 12-year-old daughter and she wanted to visit her friend that was two or three blocks away. You know, the way our city is set up without any lighting, you feel just really uncomfortable in that case with your daughter going and visiting her friends unless you tagged along. And, you know, I think one way that investors look at a community to see if they want to invest there is, do you have all the attributes of a community? And one attribute of a community is lighting. And of course, lighting is expensive, and we're brand new, and so it's understandable that we don't have very much of it out there. We do have some nice, attractive lighting on Huntington, and we have some here and there, but we're pretty pitch black here. So the thought was, as time goes on, and this is just one of the elements that we look at as part of developing our city, is where do we need streetlights and when do we need streetlights? So the Public Works Committee has wrestled the last two or three months with first identifying locations that they feel are really important for lighting purposes, and they came up with a list of 19. And then Tom Weller, who is a member of the committee, he's co-chair or
chair.
So Linda, you're not chair? Okay. Linda's in there someplace as chair. Vice chair?
Co-chair.
All right. Anyway, Tom was good enough, because he works for Mid-State Electric to, as the committee identified locations to determine the cost of putting lights in those locations. So you have a map before you here that identifies the 19 locations that the committee's come up with, and Tom correspondingly has costs associated with that. We have in our budget, again, we're talking about goals earlier, one of our goals was to put some lighting out there based upon what our piggy bank could accomplish, and we set aside about $10,500 for streetlights for this year. And then we also put aside a little bit of extra money, if necessary, for lighting purposes under youth activities, noting that maybe for purposes of youth or something, we might address lighting. So the Public Works Committee finally decided that of the 19 locations, and giving the cost considerations, that they would offer up four different locations representing six lights for your consideration. And the first place they came up with was William Foss, as it intersects 97, because that's pretty dark, a lot of traffic there. They suggested two street lights at that location. They also recommended Finley Butte, as it intersects Highway 97, as another location for two street lights. And then thirdly, they said, you know, we need attentions over on Huntington, and, you know, strategically, we should probably start north and work southward. And so with that in mind, they suggested street lights at the entryway to Finley Drive and Huntington, and also Caldwell Drive and Huntington. And of course, these are recommendations. If you were to go with this recommendation, we do have enough money to accomplish all six street lights. Or alternately, you can look at the list of 19 or come up with any number of locations and say you'd rather sponsor those instead. The Public Works Committee has also had two other thoughts that are starting to formulate. And one is, well, it's nice that they struggled to find a location this year for lighting, but they're of a broader sense, and that is there ought to be a long-term lighting strategy. There ought to be like a five-year lighting strategy that is updated annually so that we know and we can tell the constituents for the next 5 years, here's where we would plan to put lighting. And in fact, they're going to take that issue up at their next Public Works meeting. And then also there's been a sidebar discussion, and that is, you know, the monies for the street lights come out of the general fund. And is there a way to work with Mid-State Electric to where they adjust maybe the rate structure so that there's some monies that are built into the rate structure that provide for the lighting each year instead of it having to go and take more money out of the general fund? So that conversation is going on as well, so that we just, as time goes on, we have street lights. Plus, we have a good financial process for doing it, and we also have a good focus for where they ought to be. All right. And so, again, this is just a work session, but these are recommendations from your hardworking Public Works Committee.
Discussion?
I'm curious. I have yellow highlights on my copy here. Does everybody have those?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what's the significance of these? And doesn't it correlate with what you went through?
Well, it should. Let's see why it doesn't.
Well, it doesn't have anything Huntington there.
Well, the second page doesn't have them.
The second page does, but he prioritized the...
Okay, there is 12 and 14 12 and 14 correspond to William Foss and Finley Butte.
Right.
Okay, and then, I don't know why they're not lighted, they're highlighted here, but item 1 and item 2 on the first page would be the other street light location.
Okay, I see there is a highlight on the right hand corner.
Oh, they're highlighted over on the other side.
Okay, I just didn't see it.
So that's it. It's just another thing for you folks to mull over. You know, what's interesting, the year is coming to an end here pretty quick, and we'll be going back through this whole exercise again of priorities. It'll be real interesting to see what our priorities are next year.
One question I had about your, the Huntington and Finley and Caldwell. I was a marketing agent for that subdivision when it came out of the ground, and it was a priority at that time to not have lots of lighting in that neighborhood. Now, I know this is on the street, but is there any conflict there? There's light, a lot of light restrictions in that neighborhood, CCNRs. Does that have any impact, or?
Shouldn't, not at the entryway, because the entryway, these would be in the public rights of way.
Yeah.
At the entryways. And again, someone that lives in Crescent Creek, if you're coming south on Huntington Road and it's dark, and especially if you drive a 1996 Ford Contour that, is semi-blind, it is pretty hard to see that either one of those entryways as you get down there.
Yeah. And
so that poses a safety issue by not having street lights at street intersections. And again, if the folks in Crescent Creek or any other neighborhood feel that they shouldn't have them because it's a light intrusion, I think that needs to be respected.
Yeah.
Don?
No, I think maybe we ought to ask the Public Works Department if there's anybody here, if they have any comments on it.
Well, that would be you and me, Scott. Oh, and it wouldn't hurt at all to hear from Linda
or Doug.
Or both, because they're present.
I think we want to start the process. And we've been talking about this for months and months and months. There's some money set aside. So if you could just set up the priority and just put up 2 or 3. And then we'll have our vision in place and our priorities for the upcoming year.
We spent a lot of time and a lot of research and a lot of thought on street lighting, which is a very important thing, like Steve brought up. What we've picked is 4 locations that we feel need it the most. What we're trying to do is pick the locations that need it the most and work our way down to the locations that need it last and put it in a long-term plan so that you as the council can budget on a yearly basis and we can have a plan to do it. And we will be sending you each month the next phase of which ones we think need to be done at the next time. So this is not something we just happened overnight. We worked on this thing for 3 months. And we've come up with four places that we really think, and we strongly recommend that you approve them and then seriously look at the rest of the recommendations that you will be getting every month.
What he's trying to say is the Public Works Committee wants to light up your life.
Thank you very much.
Don't give up your job for your day job to become a comedian. Just like
you're trying to hurt my one feeling.
No.
I would like to offer up a couple of thoughts. I agree that we need to get started. We need to show that we've got the capability, and let's get started. I would ask the question that, and I actually heard this at the last Public Works Committee, the idea of what I'll phrase as the three P's, you know, philosophy, policy, and the plan. My interest is in identifying what is the city's philosophy for lighting, which gets developed by the planning or by the Public Works Committee, comes to the council, and gets placed into policy, and then a plan gets developed from that. And why I point these out is, are we going to put the same lights? Are we going to use these lights? We're talking about lights here. Are we talking about these lights that go down Huntington? Okay. Thought has been given to lights that actually serve that kind of an area. For instance, the lights at Findlay and Caldwell, you know, that's an intersection. It's out in a dark area, and I'm sure there's lights that are designed specifically for that. Okay. So having a philosophy says to us that we already have a start of types of lights that we're putting down Huntington. Those are lights that are decorative, that speak to the community, and then in other areas, we're going to put lights appropriate to those areas. Not necessarily those that we have down Huntington, because I can assure you, they're not cheap. So,
that's it. Two more things along this line. First of all, Tom is going to go back and rework the numbers. He thinks he's overstated some of the costs here, and that he can get the costs down. And secondly, you know, not only are we going to look at different kinds of street lighting to, you know, formulate our city, but also, you know, there's no reason that in some places we just can't have some light that's affixed to it, you know, to a telephone pole, right, or something. So as to really reduce the costs, you know. So the goal here is, we know we don't have much money in the piggy bank, but we also know that we need to advance the cause of our city every day. So how do you do both? Well, I think we've belabored this.
Yep.
You folks just think about what you want to do.
Okay.
All right.
Then we're at item 9, which is public comments, and we would take public comments at this time. And I'd like to ask you to keep it set 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Andy was the director of the Lapine Chamber of Commerce. I think I'm probably not the only person in this sitting out here in the audience that's somewhat confused about your agenda and about the discussion I thought we were going to have surrounding the TRT funding. At the last city council meeting, I thought it was pretty clear in saying that what we need to do was sit down and have a discussion surrounding this with the council members, and you informed me that the place to do that was in a work session. And so you put it on the agenda, which Steve said he'd already planned on doing that, and here we are, and the agenda item was just completely gone over, and no discussion, no chance to discuss, and I was just confused.
Let me say then that I think that, and the council can guide me here, that we did leave the item 3 TRT funding discussion concerning the Lapine Chamber's Chamber of Commerce's request for contract reconsideration, and came out and moved forward. And I'm thinking that it's appropriate that we go back to that. So, council members? Okay, then we will move out of public comment. Thank you for your comments.
We have a comment right here. She's been dying for about an hour now.
What I'd like to do is just go back to item number 3, which is TRT funding. And pick it up there with that discussion. Are your comments related to who had their hand up? I think it's appropriate to keep it, you know, they've been here patiently, and we actually, by accident, moved past that. So let's go to the TRT funding. Open discussion. Stu?
Well, okay.
Awesome.
Well, I'm glad this came back up, and I'm glad that the Chamber sent the letter, because I have to admit, for myself, I'm coming down to an issue of, you know, doing the legal thing, which is the city's responsibility to make sure TRT funds are being spent on TRT issues or items, for lack of a better word. I don't know, it's getting late. I'm still on Eastern Standard Time, forgive me. But then there's also the moral thing. And for myself, there comes a point when there needs, you know, I have to decide within myself whether it's better to do, well, legal is right and personal right is right. And for myself, at times I have to go with my personal right thing to do. And I think the council, for myself, we need to reconsider what we decided the last time we talked about this subject. And not going into what was discussed in executive session, because we can't do that, but I would like to ask the council to reconsider, and for a future item for the council to discuss would be the TRT funding. So that's, you know, that's where I'm coming from.
Comments, Dan?
I think that it does deserve some discussion. I think that in this community, we're a small community, we want to be a small town, we want to grow together, and I think the partnerships that we have developed in trust, we need to support, and we need to, at the very least, have some good open conversation. It doesn't mean that we don't change something, but we do need to understand the why we do things. And I think it requires some discussion to get there.
Okay, Don?
I agree. I also wonder if it would be inappropriate to the emails that you received on TRT funding. That's public document, isn't it?
Yeah.
Why couldn't we pass those emails on as to what's happening in other cities and pass it on to the chamber director and let her look them over along with their board of directors and let them see some of the things that we're seeing?
Are you asking if that's okay?
I assume that it's okay because it's a public document.
You bet.
So would you like to see those, Ann?
Absolutely. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay.
Sure. I mean, I don't know if what you've said is so vague. If you have emails that speak to how the TRT funding is done, I have those as well, which I'm happy to share with you.
Well, what happened is as I understand it, some city, someplace, and it wasn't our city, put an email out through League of Oregon Cities that they wanted to know how other cities were handling TRT funds. And what these emails are emails that other city managers or city officials have put in as this is how our city handles it. And it just gives you an insight on what's going on in other cities around the state of Oregon.
I'd love to see that. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I would add to that that this is very recent information.
Yes, it is.
So I think...
But I agree we need to review it.
What I think is appropriate this time is that, we've talked this at length. And I know that we really need to talk this with the chamber.
That's why we're here.
And so we have talked about the idea that coming to this meeting tonight would be a time that we can discuss it. So we're on the subject right now. The council is in agreement that we should put this on the
October
10th agenda, and at that point the chamber can come prepared as a participant to fully discuss it further.
Well, there again, I'm confused. We've been there, done that. We asked initially, before it ever came to the city council meeting, we asked to come to a work session and have a discussion. We discussed it, talked about it in a city council meeting. It came up again. We were there to discuss it, and we're not given an opportunity to discuss it. We asked for the opportunity to discuss it in a work session. We're here to discuss it, and now you're telling us we have to come to the city council meeting to discuss it.
Who did you talk to about discussing it tonight?
At the last council meeting, I stood up and asked for the opportunity. I asked initially of Steve long ago. Then at the last council meeting, I stood up and asked for the opportunity to sit down and discuss this. I was told that the opportunity would be given to us in this work session, and that's why we're here.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's safe to say that we're sitting here willing to discuss it.
Well, then ask me questions. Let me tell you things. Let's discuss it. Let's not put it off for another meeting. That's just, and how long are we going to do this?
I will say this in support of the fact that we're going to have to take it to the next one if we want to make a decision about any kind of changes.
Absolutely.
Okay, so the work session is where we can listen to further input on the part of the chamber and go for it.
Okay, well, first off, I think the independent contractor status piece of this has just been overworked. We've belabored it. It's probably, we're not ever going to come to any sort of agreement with regard to that. So let's just get past that. What the bottom line is, if you are funding an agency with $50,000 and you're putting a stipulation of 35%, which equates to $17,500, taking into account payroll taxes and payroll expenses, that does not pay a minimum wage employee for like 20 to 25 hours a week, is all that pays for. There are certain expectations of the visitor center. You have those, we have those of ourselves. There are things that need to be done. There are visitors' guides, there's advertising, there's promotions, marketing, there's just being there for all for the hundreds of people that come in, and that it just can't be done with that kind of money. The bottom line is that's not enough money. It's a very labor-driven, labor-intensive operation. If our budget was $100,000, $200,000, or something like that, then maybe 35% or less could even be a reasonable amount. But when all you have is $50,000, $17,500 just isn't going to do it. That's what it comes down to. You have a workforce that puts in way more hours than they're paid for.
At minimum wage.
Our executive assistant will now be paid a nickel per hour more than minimum wage. That's embarrassing. That's just, it's mortifying to me. Our office manager only gets a few dollars more than minimum wage. And we won't even talk about what I get. But the point is it's a passion-driven organization, not just money-driven. Dan's comment to, you're going to get more from someone you pay. Yes, you will, but you can't pay for the passion that these people put into this. And that goes to the volunteers as well. The volunteers have made such a commitment to being there on a daily basis and to do what we ask them to do, that what they put in is invaluable. And that allows the rest of us to do some of those other things that need to be done. But it's just, you just have to understand. And I so totally appreciate your fiscal responsibility. It's admirable that you want to show this responsibility to your community. But it just, a percentage doesn't work on just this small a budget.
Hold us accountable.
Yeah, we don't mind being accountable. We don't mind making reports. We have probably higher expectations than you have of what we do with the money that's left over. We want to succeed. We want to be able to do marketing. We want to show the rest of the world how wonderful Lapine is. And we're doing it, I think, in a very fiscally responsible manner with how we put together the visitors' guides and the things that we have to. We shop for the best rates. We do a ton of it in-house. We don't squander the money. Trust me. There's not enough there to squander. It's a very small budget, and I think we do a remarkable job with it.
Based on your original budget for the amount of money that's given, approximately how is it broken down?
Well, apparently the previous budget an actual budget came to 50. The staffing came to 57% of.
Okay, and in dollars that was I think you got $57,000 from them last year.
It was.
54,000. So actually, 57% would be about half of that would be about what?
28,000. Oh, it something occurred to me. I was just thinking today. You know, we're at the city level. We pay. Benefits, you know, health benefits and things, not a whole lot less than what we're asking them to run a visitor center on, just the health benefits that we offer for one person, you know, it's just not that, you know, it's pretty amazing. I mean, it's amazing to me, as freely as we give money out to all these different things, that we won't be so tight on this, and that's why I still feel like we got to get to the why. There's got to be an underlying why that we want to control this so tightly.
Well, that's why we brought it back out of executive session to discuss this, because it need be for myself. After our discussion, it had to be revisited, and. For myself, I was glad to see that you folks refused to sign that contract.
Mm-hmm.
I was glad to see it, to bring it back here for further discussion. And there's got to be a way to work around all this. I mean,
you know, if our goals are not aligned, then we need to align them. You know, we need to talk about what it is we really want to accomplish that we're not accomplishing. Why? What is the problem? What is it?
Yeah, what are we trying to accomplish?
Well, and as my recollection is, it was one report we wanted to see, and then St. Helens goes up. I mean, good God.
Yeah.
You know, we are here to work together.
Yeah.
And, you know, we need to come to some understanding to get this taken care of. I mean, it's not, you know, I walked into your office a week ago. And I'm sorry, but it was so depressing, and I can understand why. I mean, you folks are under some massive amount of pressure over there, and you can't do anything, you can't function, you don't have enough room, and, you know, and here the city was kind of taking the screwdriver to you.
Well, that's certainly how it felt, and I know, you know, you've said repeatedly that there's no inference of any wrongdoing or anything like that. So that's not even the case. We just don't understand why you would take something that really is working reasonably well, spending the money in a responsible manner, and to put that kind of constraints on us. And you have staff that wonders if they have a job the next day.
I think, Anne, that it wasn't that. I think the whole thing came down is that in the past there was a contract, and that contract said that there would be reports sent to the council at various times. The contract was never fulfilled, and that's what brought this whole thing up, because I felt that if we had a contractual obligation, if I have one, for instance, if I have a contractual obligation to pay my house payment once a month, I pay that house payment once a month. And I feel that if there's a contractual obligation on the part of either person, either the city or the chamber, and the city's supposed to give you a report, it should be there, and it should be there on time. If the chamber is supposed to give the city a report, the report should come to the chamber or the city, and it should come to the city on time. And that's what brought the whole thing up, because we weren't getting that report. And I think had the report been coming, as was agreed on the original contract, I don't think this would have ever came up. I really don't. I think it would have just gone off.
I think we've already sent a report. So it certainly shows our intention to fulfill that obligation. I think I would hope you would move beyond what happened last year. This is a new year. We're moving forward.
New players.
And yeah, new players. Let's just get beyond that piece of it.
I was going to say that as soon as we found out that the contract was in existence that needed to be fulfilled, it was done. And I was part of that. And right now, the whole staff is working together on a weekly basis to keep on top of all the figures and adding every item that we take care of regarding tourism is being recorded and analyzed and broken down into sections of the country where we're working with people. And the whole deal is completely different. And then one other thing that I wanted to let you know as parliamentarian is that there was a change in the bylaws of the Chamber Board to add tourism to our governmental affairs and our economic development committee. That will be a constant consideration now and reported to the board with board oversight. And it'll be a part of what we do in the future. And it's a pretty terrific thing because we have plans to use that committee to promote tourism as well and to help the visitor center. So I think it's a great thing. And my last comment is that for the past couple years that I've been involved with the Chamber on a regular basis as an employee, I give 20 to 40 hours a week over to the community, besides what I do at the Chamber, to be sure that Lapine is out there.
Right.
And I'll tell you what, if we continue this way, that's going to stop. And that's 40 hours a week times 52 weeks a year. That's a couple thousand hours of time that is not going to be available to visitor center. And I'm really ready to make that decision if we can't come to an understanding and work together. Period.
I think everyone acknowledges that there have been errors made. The problem is that we can't seem to move past them. We're in a very small community with very limited players who live next to each other and go to breakfast together. At some point, we have to say, okay, new rules, start over, do over, reset. And otherwise, it's going to end up being a big divide in this town that's going to damage the town, I believe.
Thank you very much, and I would like to ask the chamber to bring with them to the October the 10th meeting, which you will be on the agenda, and we will discuss it at length. Bring all your numbers and all your the reports, the other pieces that you feel are pertinent that. We have one council member who is missing tonight, and we will get at it.
That's all we ask.
Thank you.
Okay. So with that, I will move back to public comments. And we outlasted them. Okay. Is there any further council input?
Oh, input?
No, I mean...
Comment? I'd like to understand why we couldn't take whatever item, or maybe I'm totally out of it here, our insurance and move it up in our discussion. Yes, thank you, the employee benefits.
Oh, at our last meeting, we agreed to table it until we had a representative attorney to represent us.
Oh, we did?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I wasn't here.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Then without further ado, is there any comments?
Just a couple of quick things that I just wanted to say before we adjourn.
Okay.
First of all, last Thursday, we went down to Salem and we met with DLCD, and they made us a full-fledged city. We now have enforcement authorities, we have zoning, we have subdivision, and we have land use, okay? And so real quick hereafter, we will start to employ all of those authorities. The other thing is that if you've seen the excellent efforts toward beautification that have gone on in front of the Bi-Mart the last week, we've got the water meter in, we've got the dirt in, we've got the lines in,
Irrigation,
thank you very much. Irrigation lines in. We're watering all of that right now, and I believe the trees are going to go in tomorrow or the next day, as soon as there's sufficient water in the soil to accommodate that. And then finally, we're going to have a meeting here on October 25th. It's a pretty important meeting, and that is as part of the transfer process where BLM exchanges and provides those three parcels to us. They need to do a scoping session for review purposes, and so we're going to have a public meeting on October 25th, which is a Thursday, at about 6 p.m. to discuss these transfer of lands. Okay? Thank you.
Okay.
I just wanted to add that we'll, at the League of Oregon Cities coming up in the next couple days, we're going to meet. Ken will be there, and
Kathy.
And that's, I guess, the only one's going. And so we have appointments made up for all three of the congressional delegates, two senators and Greg Walton's office. You know, it's important. It's lost in all this excitement. The city of Lapine still does not actually have title to the assets of the sewer and water district we're operating. And loan payments are due in November. It's tough for us to make a loan payment on something that you don't own. We don't have a debt. So it's Jeremy and I, this again, I know it's not fun, it's boring, and isn't going to fill a room, but there's some details that are major that are hanging out there. So we're going to have the deputy director of the USDA to meet, and he's agreed to meet Wes, so he'll be there. And you know, we've got to stay on top of this. This will drag on and on, and I think it'll go on for months as it is, and I don't know that we'll get it done by November, but anyway, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. So there's a lot of those kinds of things. Said you're not excited.
Okay.
Mr. Walden and Mr. Wyden said to say hi to the city council.
What about President Obama? Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Never mind.
He drove by.
That's a joke. Dry humor.
Just the last comment. I would like to point out to everybody or remind everybody that on the 9th of October, Senator Wyden and staff will be here to present presidential signed copies of the Land Conveyance Act to both the county and the city. And that will take place at 9 o'clock. We encourage everybody to come, and we're probably going to have some refreshments.
Better have cake.
So
make the county buy it.
Having said that, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned.
Opposed? Aye.
Stifle you.
I don't.